Welcome to Super Tarthis for Parshas Bamidbar. I'm going to start with a couple of Mivkar Paninims. First, we're still in Shar Aleph. Vamar, Guf below Chochma, Kavais below Yesod. Very short piece. It says a body without wisdom, this is Chochma Satara, is like a house or a structure without a foundation. It's very simple. It's the same sort of thing as, a Guf without Neshama. It's a structure. Right, it's a structure. So the structure can look nice, it can function partially, it can do some things, but ultimately it's built on shaky ground. So imagine something built on quicksand. The Leaning Tower of Pisa is built on something that is not going to last. So you get to Olam Haba, things look a little bit different. And not only that, but what is informing that, what is informing that goof? Makes all the differences in the world. Second one, very nice idea about how Chachma allows one to overcome, some of the realities of the physical world. Amar, mi shenoda b'chachma, somebody who is known for being wise, mabitin elav be'en ha'hidur, people are going to look at him with hidur. So the Pirush Kadmon says that even if this person is not particularly attractive, people are going to look at him favorably. What does that mean? Said differently, Chochma is more beautiful than physical beauty. And the net effect of the Chochma is greater than somebody who gets preferential treatment because they're beautiful. There are people who do seem to, they seem to prove, books get judged by their covers. And people who choose a life which is not so deeply in this world, but more rooted in greater matters, they occasionally it seems as if the emphasis is placed elsewhere, so they are less attractive. People are going to judge them by their covers in the other way until the people realize they're Talmud Chacham. And when they're a Talmud Chacham, all of a sudden, there are halachas that Talmidei Chachamim get preferential treatment. People want to do business with a Talmud Chacham. They'll marry their kids off to the Talmud Chacham's kids. And further, in every way, they're going to need the Talmud Chacham for guidance. So because of all of that, it seems as if they end up ahead even in this world. Next one, Va'amar Shesok Vesi Natsel Shma Vesilmad. So what does this mean, Shtok? So Pirush Kadmon understands this talking about somebody saying something that you don't want to hear. Right? And the Otzim Mefarshim goes in the same method, meaning they're starting up with you, they're stoking the coals, as it were. Just be quiet and don't answer. Shma, this next one is about Divrei Chachamim and Vetilmod, and you get to learn. So there's a line, people say, don't just stand there, do something. But sometimes, don't just do something, stand there. I think people feel very impulsive to try to respond to things, to try to get involved in whatever's going on, and perhaps to be active in, in whatever is happening. Sometimes the best thing is no action and to be absorbing, reacting, whatnot. So somebody's upset for whatever reason. You can just simply rely on the idea that it takes two to really get into a tiff. And should you sidestep it entirely, you can avoid that tiff. So that's beautiful. And second, learning is a two-way street. We need to be active, right? There's this beautiful Rav Chaim Volozhiner, Shnayim V'yoshvin V'ein B'neihem Divrei Torah. There's no Torah in between them. That means you need to engage with what somebody else says. But in certain ways, the engagement is actually listening to what the other person says, right? We have our own mental pathways and where they take us. I mean, there are certain sorts of logical problems which I'm better at solving. And there are certain logical problems and thought patterns that, say, for example, my chavrusa would be stronger at solving. And the two of us can use our strengths together to try to make sure that we understand whatever the subject matter we touch. When it comes to something of mathematical or geometric nature, I need them. And I need to think about, you know, what they're saying. Whereas if we're trying to make a diuk on a lashon or something like that, I may have something strong to offer. Listen. Listening makes you stronger. Shmias HaOzen is one of the Memches Kinyanei Torah for a very significant reason. Let's do, you know, the Pirkei Avos for a second. We've mentioned before the story about Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma in Perek Kinyan Torah. And the idea there was he was offered a ton of money to go to a city. And he says, even if you give me all this money, I won't go to a place that isn't a Makom Torah. So what happened to Kiruv? So Rav Yaakov Emden, I believe, says it must have been that he thought that he wasn't going to be able to cut it there. Meaning, we do have a value of sharing Torah with others in places that are a little bit more of a desert than they are a paradise in terms of Torah. But that depends on the facts and the circumstances. If the facts and the circumstances show that you're going to be a real net positive and that you're going to be able to lift other people up and you're going to get something out of it, then that can be a wonderful endeavor. However, if you're going to come out, if you're going to come out really limping, then that is absolutely a cheshbon. So what was Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma thinking? That's, you know, that's worth considering. And another thing to consider is, how did he know it's not a Makom Torah? So some people try to explain that he knew it wasn't a Makom Torah because they wanted to pay him. Now, on its face, that seems difficult because they wanted to pay him. Well, you know, ma'ani b'chinam, afatem b'chinam, maybe there's an idea that, like, you know, Torah matters shouldn't be paid for. But I would say, I mean, today we see mechanchim get paid, rabbanim get paid, dayanim get paid. It's not a princely fee, but nevertheless, it's something else. I think that one approach would be that he saw it as a binary. He felt like his Torah was going to be compromised, and he had to say tovli teres picha mi'alvei zahav v'kesef. And if it was a binary choice, then Torah had to be chosen. Or alternatively, maybe he thought that really the currency that they were trying to offer him was, you know, we're going to give you money. And that was something that he wanted. And he felt like the value system was too broken for him to be able to make inroads. Right. So, you know, if you go to a place and they think that the Talmud Chacham, all they want is money, then, you know, there's a crack in the foundation with respect to values, and maybe he felt like he couldn't.
So let's do a couple stories now. There's a story about the Chassam Sofer, which is really wild. So he was basically the Rosh HaKahal of Pressburg at the time. Like, really, you know, everybody turned to the Chassam Sofer. One day there was a community leader who knocked on his door in the middle of the night, and he said, I have a secret matter for the Rav. Can we speak privately? So he comes in and he says, look, I just want you to know, everybody thought that he was wealthy, but he actually had lost everything in deals. He signed as an Ariv for all these other people, guarantees, and they defaulted, and then he had to get himself deeply in debt, and he was supposed to then travel to a copper fair the next day in Leipzig, but he didn't even have enough money for the travel expenses. So the Chassam Sofer turned to him and he said, how much money do you need for this? He said, at least 100 gold coins. So the Chassam Sofer went to the cupboard, took out a 100 gold coin note, his entire life saving and gave it to the man as a loan. On the word and condition, he said, you should just do the first deal that comes your way, and I'm confident that you'll have lots of success. So he went to Leipzig, and he maintained his appearance. He met some merchant, and he got a big shipment of coffee beans from Brazil for 400 gold coins, plus taxes and shipping, and that was a big deal. Although he was terrified, he remembered to accept the first deal, so he signed the contract without paying anything up front. And within a week, all of a sudden, the prices of coffee spiked, and he made back a 25% profit, making 100,000 gold coins, and his fortune basically was restored in a very short time. So he went back to the Chasam Sofer, and he gave him a 100-coin note for his loan, but he also gave him, as a token of gratitude, a diamond ring. And the Chasam Sofer looked at it with a lot of joy, and he says, I've never seen such a beautiful diamond. It's just exquisite. And they were Talmidim with the Chasam Sofer. He said, Rebbe, is this not ribbis? You can't take a gift from somebody who, you know, who borrowed that money from you. And the Chasam Sofer said, I've never seen such a beautiful diamond. If you brought this to me before I lend you the money, then I would have accepted it. But now that I've been your lender, it could be a ribbis problem. So give it to your wife. I'm sure she'll be happy with it. So the man left, and the Talmidim asked the Rebbe, he said, Rebbe, you knew this was ribbis to begin with. Why did you go on and praise the diamond, and why were you so excited, and like, what was the big deal? So the Chasam Sofer said, I had such simcha shel mitzvah because it's a rare opportunity to be tested with the isur of ribbis. And I, you know, I really am involved in lending, and nobody would try to offer me ribbis. When this opportunity came to me from the Ratzon Hashem, how could I not do it with such great joy? Next is a story about Chazon Ish, which I think is very, very interesting and instructive for all of us. So there was a young boy, he was 12, he was an Ilui, went to Panovich, was doing great, but he kind of lost his way. He spent a lot of his time playing chess, and he even did it during Elul. He just, you know, some people trip over their own brains, and this was one of those kind of things. So the student asked the Chazon, another student came to the Chazon Ish, and he said, can you help us out? You figure this out. So the Chazon Ish invited him over, and when the boy came, he didn't say anything bad about what the boy did. Instead, he asked him about his family and started talking with him and learning. So the Chazon Ish started asking the boy all these kashas, and the boy obviously was very, very smart, and he was ready. So they had a pilpul for hours and hours, and you know, before they wrapped up for the day, before the boy left, the Chasam Ish said, would you please come back the next day to continue? So what's the lekach as far as chinuch is concerned is he didn't need to give him tochacha or musar in this instance. He said, you know, people need sipuk. The neshama needs sipuk. And just as much as it needs air to breathe. And you can't take away, you know, a pleasure from somebody without giving them something in return. He said he needed to bring the boy back to the sweetness of Torah. By engaging him and really, really having it plug in, he could abandon all of his shtuyot that he was dealing with and get right back into the Milchamta Shel Torah. Now I'll just leave with Akasha. Rashi this week in Gimel Chavtes says, Mishpachas Bnei Kahas Yachanu Teimona. And Rashi notes that they were next to Reuven, they were Teimona, and we get this idea of Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheino. So that's why during Dasan and Aviram and the 250 men and Korach and his Eda, they were brought along in this machlokas. So Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheino, got to keep good neighbors. So the only problem is this neighborhood was not chosen by the neighbors. It was chosen by Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kodesh Baruch Hu set them up. And he said, you know, this is the way the Shiftei Kar are supposed to be. And if that's true, then why could they, I guess, be punished or dragged in or whatnot in such a circumstance? Thank you for learning with me. Have a wonderful Shabbos.